the theme from the Sears Radio Theater. Tonight's story is a comedy with Andy Griffith as your host. Here's a preview.
Where's Vietnam?
It's right next door to Thailand, where my girlfriend, Sirikit, came from.
This is the lady from Bangkok, the one you almost married?
Right. Say, man, you got a good memory. Yes, Sirikit, I really cared a lot for that woman.
The Sears Radio Theater will begin after this message from your local station.
This is Andy Griffith. Listen.
All right, up and at 'em. Unget them pillars. Come on, up and on. Off your bunks and on your feet. All right, let's hit it. Formation in 5 minutes.
The time is the recent past, and the story is about a man. A soldier named Steele. Or rather, it's the story of a two-day pass that was stretched into 3 days, as seen through the fuzzy eyeballs of a buddy of his. The reason for me referring to the fuzz in his eyes will become obvious as we march along.
Steele. Nobody ever called him Conroy. Was an army cook attached to the 52nd Civil Affairs Group, Fort Gordon, Georgia, whenever he was an AWOL, which was fairly often. We get into a ticklish area here. Some people will say as soon as you make a generalization about any member of a minority group that you're stereotyping, or worse yet, you're prejudiced. Well, as a so-called minority member myself, I'll go out on a limb and say, I think some people in all groups do fit some stereotypes with no loss of dignity or anything, as long as the stereotype isn't intentionally degrading. Still, my buddy Steele was a West Indian, a brother from St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands. And he was, I think, what a lot of people feel West Indians are really like. Warm, temperamental, full of life. He was a fantastic storyteller. Spell that liar. A really fine cook, army or not. A generous friend, a heartbreaker. It was his boast that he had left him smiling on 3 continents and 12 islands. As well as being one of the heaviest drinking dunes I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. His first question when we got into town was, "Who's bumping, man?" with an accent that was so lyrical it sounded like singing. I remember a weekend with Steele that almost left me with the need to be pumped.
As you all know, this is a morning police call, which means I want you men to go over this area, pick up every gum wrapper, bottle top, scrap of paper, and cigarette butt you see. If you can move it, pick it up. Otherwise, we'll come back through here and paint it. Fine, move out!
Which is just about the way the day started. The day which somehow or other became more than a day. What just now happened, really, is that our story has just begun.
Sears Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis production of The Sears Radio Theater. Our story, A Weekend Pass by Odie Hawkins. Our stars, Brock Peters and Robert Doki. The Sears Radio Theater is brought to you by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops for value.
We've often been told that an army marches on its belly. By that I mean what goes into the men makes a march. But no one has ever explained what happened to the army when it's cook's night off, or what the cook does once he's free of the kitchen.
Steele had gotten a couple of $100 in back pay. The pumping began as soon as he received the money. He corralled Jack Skid, Bobo McKinnon, Sergeant Jackson, and myself to go to the service club. It was on a Friday night. A typical peacetime U.S. Army Friday night in 1964. Jack Skid, our resident poet, after 8 whiskey sours...
I know everyone sitting at this table has always wanted to know why monkeys stay in trees, right?
Yeah.
There was no getting around it. After a certain number of whiskey sours, Jack had to tell us why monkeys lived in trees.
Wait, Jack. Hold on to your monkeys. Let everybody have another round first. Waitress!
Yeah? Can I take your order again?
Another round for my friends.
Oh, looks like good sergeant has decided to take 10 on us.
Down in the jungle where the tall grass grow, lived one of the most sarcastic monkeys the world would ever know. One day he happened to struggle up a tree to snow a little bit and dream up something new for his wit.
Everybody got a
fish? Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Down on the ground lived a lion who knew he was king. The monkey spied the lion and said, trying to put evil into his head, "Hey, lion, there's a big tough dude living over there, and the way he talks about you would put gray in your hair. From what he says, he ain't your friend, and he sees your body as something to bend. The only reason I'm telling you this is because I'm really your friend."
"Some friend, that is, eh, man?"
"Yeah, Mr. Lion, he talked about you in a scandalous way, and that's all I've got to say." Now, the lion took off like a .44 out to even the score. He ran through the jungle like death on a breeze, knocking down all the coconuts off the trees. The lion stalked an elephant from behind, thinking he'd give him a pretty rough time. The elephant checked the lion out from the corner of his eyes and said, "Look, lion, you better pick on somebody your size." The lion wouldn't listen to reason and made a slash and beat him to the ground with one mighty smash.
Oh, now, left, right.
They fought all night and half the day, and I still don't see how the lion got away. But he finally dragged off more dead than alive, leaving himself wide open for more of the monkey's jive. "Hey, Mr. Lion, you really look fast. The other fella must have really been bad. When you left here, you were roaring like you was going to eat somebody up. Now look at you. You're all beat up." The monkey, hopping with glee, jumped up and down. His foot missed the limb, and he plunged to the ground. The lion was on him with all 4 feet, angry enough to grind him into hamburger meat. The monkey looked up with tears in his eyes and said, "Please, Mr. Lion, I apologize. If you let me go, I'll tell you something you really ought to know." Mr. Lion lifted up a paw, and the monkey scampered up a tree. "What I wanted to tell you," he screamed from the tree, "I'll put the elephant on you again if you mess with me." The lion stalked away growling, "Are you just talking? Up in them trees is where you better stay." And that's where they are till this very day.
So there. Once again, we find out what keeps lions on the ground.
Elephants.
Oh, come on, you guys. I kind of like to find out why the monkeys live in trees every now and then. Where is this?
Okay, it's okay, Steele, my friend. I can take it.
Another round?
Yes, and a double for our poet friend's kid.
Yeah, Jack. You know, I've always been puzzled by one thing that happens in that monkey poem.
What's that?
Why would you choose the biggest creature in the jungle, the elephant, for the lion to mess with?
Because incongruity is the soul of humor, Brother Bobo, as every good comedian knows.
Incon who?
Incongruity.
I feel I just have to pause here for a moment to say a few words about something. I've been in a lot of groovy situations, but I don't think anything can equal the good vibes of a group of soldiers off duty. I look around the table, over the rims of hundreds of glasses, at Sergeant Jackson. Sergeant Jackson has been in a couple of wars, and he has ribbons and decorations to prove it. But he doesn't swagger around acting heroic or anything, if you know what I mean. Right now, he's checking his eyelids for holes. And my buddy, Steele? Well, he was up to something which I didn't know anything of. Not at that time.
We left them in the service club, and they haven't retreated one single sip. Sergeant Jackson never forgets that he is a sergeant, even while he's semi-asleep.
Ain't no sense in going home. Jody's got your girl and gone. Sound off. 1, 2. Sound off. 3, 4. Cadence count. 1, 2, 3, 4.
As you can hear, he's always thinking of the troops.
Jack Skid, whom we kid about having a name like Skid, is our poet in residence, in a manner of speaking, and the company's communications specialist. This guy can take a bunch of metal scraps, a couple of coat hangers and a coil of wire, spit on the whole business, and build a radio that could reach the South Pole. I've seen him do it. Well, not the South Pole, but he did wake some poor dude up in West Texas once.
Good morning, Mr. J. Bird. I came to buy your wings. to fly over to Mrs. Boots' house to hear Mrs. Boots sing. Mrs. Boots has a new little baby, and when the baby cries, she rocks the baby in a cradle and feeds him apple pie.
Sometimes Jack's portrait doesn't quite receive the recognition he feels it deserves.
Okay, okay, if you Claudette didn't like that, how about this one? Roses are red, violets are blue.
Great guy, always. His portrait, well, that's a different story. Bobo McKinnon is the next Golden Glove title holder from Philadelphia, 147 pounds. I think you suspect that he'd held some kind of title just from looking at the muscles this dude has. He's one of the few human beings I've ever seen with a set of muscles between thumb and forefinger. Great guy, but you wouldn't want to make him mad about anything. And Steele, Conroy Raphael Steele.
Waitress, you slowing down, sweetheart? How about another round?
Do you guys know you probably set a new service club record for whiskey sours consumed in a four-hour period?
What's the record for frozen daiquiris?
Huh?
Now, that's typically Steele. Not quite satisfied to settle for the easy way. I mean, you get the impression that he merges fantasy and reality better than most people.
Okay, so there I was. Me and a couple of good friends.
Rum and coke?
No, man, these were people. Anyway, there we are in the middle of this cane field. Moon as bright as morning. Machetes in hand. Slashing and fighting with a whole troop of ghosts.
Troop of what?
You heard the man. He said ghosts. Right, Steele?
Right. We had just about gotten the best of them before they piled up, pulled off this franken movement over to the left.
Oh, see what I mean? You never quite know whether he's pulling your leg or not. The only time you can be absolutely certain he's not putting you on is when he cooks or talks about cooking.
How did I become a cook?
Yeah.
Look, simple. I took one look at my first breakfast of creamed beef on toast in basic training, and I thought to myself, hey, Steve, you can do better than that. So I become a cook. No, let me tell the truth now. That's not exactly the way it happened. I had this buddy of mine who was General Porter's personal chef. Remember him?
Oh, yeah, I remember him. We used to call him old Pitty Patty Porter because he was always sneaking around Pitty Patty.
That's the one. Yeah. Well, my buddy Johnny Wolf was about to lose his cushy job because he was running out of ideas for meals. And he asked me to help. Well, if the truth be told, Johnny Wolf never had a giant imagination to start with, you know.
Well, how did he know that you knew anything about cooking?
Oh, we knew each other from back home. Well, even if I must say so myself, I had a pretty big reputation in St. Thomas, you know. Anyway, I saved his job by making poulet basque.
Poulet who?
Poulet basque. Basque chicken, man.
Hey, you know, speaking of strange food and all, I've been dying to ask somebody, who are these little Chinese guys walking around the post holding hands?
Oh, for goodness sakes, Bo, you're worse than my Uncle Wally. Don't you know by now that all the yellow people ain't Chinese? Those guys are Vietnamese. They're here for signal school training.
Okay, so they're Vietnamese, whatever that is. But what's with this hand-holding bit?
Just a custom, old buddy. They just have a different sense of values about stuff like that.
Where's Vietnam?
It's right next door to Thailand, where my girlfriend, Siri Kit, came from.
This is the lady from Bangkok, the one you almost married?
Right. Say, man, you got a good memory. Yes, Siri Kit, I really cared a lot for that woman. I think she was the only woman I ever met who could cook better than me. I was attached to the American embassy in Bangkok. Somebody had passed the word to the ambassador that I made the best batapa this side of Rio de Janeiro.
Come on, Steele, play fair. Speak English. What's this batatopa stuff?
Batapa, my poetic friend, is a Brazilian dish. It's chicken stewed in coconut milk, seasoned with sliced shrimp, onion, red pepper, and olive oil. Anyway, the ambassador, whose last post had been in Brazil, finagled me onto the embassy staff because he had fallen in love with Brazilian food. And that's how I met Siri Chris.
Hey, wait a minute. Something is missing here. I thought we were talking about Vietnam.
Last call, Jake.
What's going on around here?
This is it. The end. Thank goodness.
Well, wait. One more round before you throw.
Come on, one more. At this point, undergoing their ritualistic last round, everyone seems to be pretty much the worst for wear except Smith and Steele. Smith has been doing a Houdini sleight of hand with the whiskey sour glasses that magically placed them squarely in front of Sergeant Jackson, which might explain why he is hors de combat, or shall I say bombed. Steele seems to be just starting his evening. And while they've all known his capacity for this sort of thing, they have to wonder why it's different this time.
Okay, that's that. Only 12 o'clock and we're out in the night. What now?
Well, I'm headed. I'm me too, and I think I speak for the good sergeant draped over my back.
Oh, well, what about you, buddy?
Well, I,
Britt, let's leave these deadbeats and go on pumping in town.
I'm kind of low on cash, Steele. I only have...
Hey, man, we ain't talking cash. We're talking about pumping. Let's grab a post taxi and go. Come on.
The sense of challenge swelled up in my chest, realizing that it seemed likely that I was going to be taken through the test of a Steele weekend, one I only suspected at that time would be a record setter. When our friends shook hands with me leaving the service club, even Sergeant Jackson unbent for the departure scene, they seemed to look at me in the way people look at other people who are obviously about to do something they wouldn't do. Back then in 1964, a medium-sized town in South Georgia wasn't much of a great place for a couple of black soldiers to go and party the night away. Gwinnett Street was where it was, and there wasn't much to that. Three clubs, the Top Hat, the Paramount, and the DeSoto. Steele, playing with the laws of averages, tossed a two-headed nickel and decided from the DeSoto Club. We grabbed a table, and Steele ordered a brand of scotch I had never heard of, nor had the waitress. We settled for rum and coke.
Well, here we go, buddy-o. Roses are red, violets may be blue, and if either one of us has got to go to heaven, I think it will be you, with all due respect.
My condition at this point was, how shall I say it, a bit unstable. Steele was in good shape. His fingers looked pickled the way they were curled up, but there was nothing wrong with the rest of them.
You got to be on your guard when you come in here. These women will dance your socks off. How about some refreshments?
2 o'clock now. Closing time. 2 o'clock, people. Now, time to call it a night.
Hey, what is this? Every place I go, they close it up.
Fortunately for me, the bar closed at 2 a.m. I don't think I could have been able to hang in there a minute longer. The bartender, wise to how reluctant troops on a weekend pass were to give it up, nudged us out with a sawed-off pool cue in his big fat hand. I think he was anxious to get home for dinner. 2 a.m. Saturday morning, slightly tipsy to put it mildly. No place to sleep. A soft South Georgian evening that was loaded with fragrances of wisteria and mint and magnolia had now surrendered to a cold, impersonal, shirt-flapping northern breeze. I shivered and made a delicate inquiry. Okay, Steele, where do we sleep tonight?
You know something, man? I could never understand what it was made Harry Belafonte so popular.
What?
Belafonte. You know, the Calypso singer.
What about Belafonte?
Well, I mean, aside from the fact that the man had nice teeth and used to show his belly button a lot, I never thought too much of his singing, you know. Take a song like Matilda. How did it go now? Matilda, Matilda, she take me money, run Venezuela.
Matilda, 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 she take me money and you will see me.
Hey, that's great, man, that vibrato. Let's take it all the way. Come
oh,
on.
No, look. I'm freezing. Hey, there's a closed-in porch. Why don't we go and sit inside?
Sure, why not? You know Mama Loco Boo-Boo?
No, not really.
Well, it goes... Look, I wonder why nobody don't like me. Maybe it's the fact that I am ugly. And then there's the banana boat song. Man, I love that one. Let me see. How we go now?
I take it you boys missed the bus back to camp.
Oh, sorry. We didn't mean to...
Yes, sir. We didn't mean to wake anybody up.
Well, you did, but that's beside the point. It's pretty chilly outside. Why don't you boys come on inside? We got a sofa, and one of y'all can sleep on a bunch of warm quilts, and the other can make a pallet with.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Williams. Williams is my name.
Mr. Williams. We certainly want to thank you. I don't think I had one more song in my body.
Oh, I understand. I was in the service myself a while back. And I've done my share of saying. Hey, here are the quilts, sir. Who sleeps on the floor?
Why don't we flip for it?
With your two-headed nickel?
Heads. I got the sofa.
Saturday morning. My mouth tasted like a bowl of ashes. I knew it was the next day and that the sun was probably shining, which made me want to keep my glazed eyeballs away from bright lights of any kind. And my head felt as though a half-track was practicing maneuvers inside. Finally, I worked up the nerve to squint over the lump of quilt around my neck and saw Steele and Mr. Williams sitting at a table in the other room, sipping what looked suspiciously to me like bourbon.
Hey, you awake, man? Come on in here. Mr. Williams is telling me about what Paris was like right after the First World War. Come in here and have an eye-opener.
Steele had been up long enough to have charmed his way into our host's liquor supply. He could do that, charm people, that is. I pulled myself off the floor, staggered into the bathroom to splash water on my aching head, and bravely marched into the living room for a half glass of eye-opener. It tasted vaguely like soapy water and iodine.
Yeah, I'm telling you, young man, there's never been another time like it in the history of the world. This is my wife, Martha.
Good morning. I heard y'all singing last night.
Good morning, Mrs. Williams.
Good morning, Miss Williams.
Now then, tell me, how will you young men like your age? Scramble? Sunny side up?
No, thank you, Mrs. Williams. We got to be going, and we're late already.
Well, no trouble. We usually have a late breakfast on Saturday. All I have to do is crack up with a few more eggshells. You wouldn't be putting us out, no?
That's really nice of you, Mrs. Williams, but we really must go.
Oh, we'd certainly like to thank you for giving us a place to sleep.
Oh, forget it. Like I was telling Steele, I know a little about what it's like to be stranded.
Well, if you won't stay for breakfast, take this bag of biscuits with you. Well, I'm sure y'all don't get homemade biscuits up at that camp.
Not once in 100 years, Mrs. Williams. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So y'all come on by next time you're in town, eh? And maybe we can pull out the old checkerboard.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks again. Take it easy.
Why didn't you want to stay for breakfast? My stomach feels like a cave.
Mine too, buddy.
Why?
Eat a biscuit.
Why?
Well, hold on, man. I'll tell you. I woke up this morning with a powerful thirst, my mouth drier than a desert. Went into the refrigerator for some ice, you know, to cool my burning throat. And there was practically nothing in the fridge but ice cubes and eggs. We would have been eating all their chow if we had eaten breakfast.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Some old people are like that, proud, you know. I left $20 under the sugar bowl knowing that they would have been insulted if we tried to pay them for their hospitality.
Yeah, you're right. You can tell what kind of people they are. However, my stomach still craves.
Where is that piece? Somewhere near here. Oh, I remember. It's in the next block.
What are you talking about? What's in the next block?
There's a guy down the street here who makes some of the most fantastic scrap iron you ever tasted.
Scrap iron? Yeah. I don't even like the name.
You got to try it, man. He usually runs off a batch on Friday and is gone by Saturday night. Come on. If we're lucky, he'll still have some.
But what about food?
Everything in its time, my friend. Everything in its time.
We compromised. In the next block, he disappeared up a little dirt path that seemed to lead nowhere and returned with a half-pint bottle of scrap iron. It was about 1:30 before we finished off a great lunch of gumbo filet at Mom's place, chased by slugs of scrap iron and red soda pop. Steele and the owner of the establishment exchanged a few recipes, and it was time to return to the bar. I have to confess, by this time, I was beginning to feel that the whole number was some kind of weird challenge, something I couldn't back away from, but I was determined to finish this weekend somehow, no matter what. We wandered into the Top Hat, the swankiest bar on Gwinnett Street, and ordered rum and coke.
Beware, a problem is approaching us.
Hi, you today, Mr. Conroy Raphael Steele.
Oh, hi, Marcine. What's happening?
I'm fine, as you can see. This is my friend, Della Crook.
Well, this here is Herb Smith. Meet Miss Marcine Wright.
Hi. Well, are you going to ask us to join you or not?
Well, certainly. By all means. Sit down. Garçon, refreshments for the ladies. What will you have? A taste of the bubbly? Caviar? A bottle of malt?
Oh, come on, Steele. Knock it off. I'll have cold beer. How about you, Della May? Beer sounds okay.
two of your very coldest beers for the ladies and two more of your superb rum and cokes for me and my buddy. Well, how you been, Marcy?
Not so hot. I thought you said you was going to call me about the raffle ticket.
Why are you so quiet?
I'm practically exhausted.
From what?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you.
Aha, refreshment. Well, here's looking at me, kid.
Steele, what about those tickets? Remember, you said...
But I thought you said the raffle was last week.
You didn't hear me tell you no such thing as that. I told you this week, and you promised about four tickets from me.
Go on, tell me. Why are you so exhausted for?
Marcine, I have been buying tickets from you for 2 years for one thing or the other, and I ain't never come close to winning nothing.
But still, you promised.
I'm exhausted from a rare form of disease. It's called stick-with-steelitis.
I didn't promise nothing.
Is it catching?
Yes, you did too, Steele.
Not unless you wanted to be.
I know when I promise something and when I don't. And I didn't promise.
If it's one thing I hate worse than clabber milk, it's a liar.
Who are you calling a liar, woman?
If the shoe fits, put it on. Come on, Della. Let's go someplace that's not infested by liars.
I got wrong. Hope I see you again.
How about right here?
Well, I don't hang out at bars. Why don't you call me?
Careful, honey. If he hangs around with old Fork Tom, he bears careful watching.
I'll call you, Della.
Looking forward to hearing from you. Bye.
Take it easy, Marcine. You and your wolf tickets.
Steele, did you promise to buy some tickets or not?
I'm almost certain I did.
You did?
Probably, but then I always promise Marcine something. She's one of those kinds of people who lives from one promise to the next. Believe me, man, it's okay. But when I first met her, she made me promise to buy her a car.
But did you?
On my pay? Be serious, man. How about another round? Waitress!
Andy Griffith with the concluding act of A Weekend Pass.
Peaceful thoughts. My eyes are wide open and I'm staring at a dim light bulb at the end of a black cord. The bulb is naked except for circling balls of gnats. The bugs are making me dizzy with their motions. And with my eyes closed, I feel dizzier still. Great. Fantastic. Nothing like life inside of merry-go-round. I practice opening and closing my eyes slowly to see whether I can create some order out of what's happening. I can't remember whether or not I'm sitting or standing or riding or what. I managed to figure it out. After a few minutes of hard calculation that I must be sprawled on my back or else I wouldn't be able to look up. Wonderful. Now things are beginning to fit. If I'm looking up, then my feet must be stretched out in front of me somewhere. Yes, sure enough, there they are, propped up against the door.
Honey, you're going to be in there much longer. The rest of us girls have to powder our noses, too.
The rest of us girls? What's going on here? Oh, no. I'm laying on the floor in the ladies' room of some kind of semi-private club that no one but Steele and the members could know anything about. Now it comes back to me. Hot, tired, and ossified, coming into a pleasantly scented room with little carpeting on the floor, I decided to take a little siesta.
Well, I'll be.
Oh, the clover's really going downhill. Bone sleeping in the ladies' room. Oh,
excuse me, ladies. I'm sorry.
Hey, where you been, man? I've been looking all over for you.
Oh, I needed a breath of fresh air. I took a little walk.
I was just wondering, thought maybe you had flaked out on me.
No, I'm not me. Hey, what time's it getting to be? What day is it?
Well, it's Monday evening, man. And we're going to catch it for being AWOL.
AWOL? Monday? I mean, what happened to Saturday night? Sunday? I mean, what happened to Sunday? To be certain, a lot of us have had the urge to get rid of some days, especially the kind that starts off badly and gets progressively worse. But what happens when you realize that you have lost a whole day when you're on a bus going back to camp? Steele wasn't exactly sure, but he felt pretty certain that we'd gone to an Elks Club dance on Saturday night, or an illegal cockfight in the country, or a raffle.
The lucky number is something Steele ain't got.
Or all three. And a church picnic on Sunday, polished off by a 12-hour nap on the shore of Clark Lake, stuffed with ham, macaroni salad, baked beans, coleslaw, barbecue ribs, spinach and collards, and wedges of peach cobbler. That late bus back to camp, bouncing my insides around, made me feel slightly seasick.
It doesn't matter how late we get back. We'll probably be shot at dawn anyway.
This is no joking matter, Steele. You know the captain's really been cracking down on people for being AWOL.
I know, man, I know. Here, have a little taste of white lightning. It'll make the bullets hurt less.
White what?
White lightning. It's guaranteed to cure or kill whatever ails you, including fear of punishment for being AWOL.
Steele, you are positively, absolutely unreal.
Attention, Private First Class Smith. A report has been placed on my desk concerning you. The report says, and I quote, Private First Class Smith, attached to the 52nd Civil Affairs Unit of the United States Army, and one of the best equipped and disciplined, I might add, willfully and with malice aforethought, absented himself from his unit without official leave on this Monday past, 30 June 1964, to be exact. Unless official language, Private Smith, you are guilty of stealing yourself on government time. The penalties for theft of government issue, GI, are as follows. For each minute stolen, you are to forfeit 1 day's pay. For each hour stolen, you are ordered to stand guard duty for an equivalent day. And for the whole day, you must pay the ultimate penalty.
Oh, no, no, no!
All right, up and at her. Let's ungrip them pillars. Off and on. Come on, let's hit it. Formation in 5 minutes.
Well, well, well. I wouldn't have believed it if I didn't see it with my own eyes. Smith, are you actually awake for change? You mean I won't have to blast my little bitty old whistle in your ear as usual?
I woke up a little earlier than usual and couldn't sleep.
It'd be great if you had insomnia all the time. It'd save lungs.
All right, you men. Let's get a move on. Captain Hammer ain't got time to wait for sluggers.
Well, needless to say, I tried to take what used to be called a low profile.
Straighten up there, Private. Stomach in, chest out, shoulders back. Your lift. Your lift. Your lift. Right, lift. You had a good home when you left.
You're right.
Stand up.
One, two.
Stand up.
Three, four.
Cadence count.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four.
Had a girl in Tennessee. Big old woman just like me. Stand up.
One, two.
Stand up.
Three, four.
By the time we had finished morning police call, attended a compulsory class on military justice, and reviewed the procedures for a coming field exercise, I was beginning to feel absolutely paranoid. I decided to skip afternoon chow because I had to find my buddy Steele.
Whoa, where you rushing to, old bean?
Jack, you seen Steele?
I saw him rushing over to the PX about 10 minutes ago. What are you guys running around like maniacs for?
I don't know why he's running around, but I'm running around to find him, to find out why I haven't been put on report for being AWOL Monday.
Oh, that.
Well, what's so funny?
Nothing, really. Don't sweat the AWOL bit. I had CQ Monday, so I marked you down hospital, acute intestinal disturbance. Are you okay, old bean?
Yeah, I'm okay now. I thought, well, never mind. Thanks, Jack. I appreciate the paper.
No big thing. What did you guys do in town? Must have been pretty interesting to hold you over for a day.
Oh, we had a couple of drinks, you know, the usual things.
Where's up? Where's up for me, man?
Steele, where have you been all day? I've been looking all over for you.
I've been
I've been going through post-clearance procedures.
Now, wait a minute. Slow down. What are you talking about? What kind of punishment did you get for Monday? Hey, let's start there. Jack covered for me. Now, what about you?
Monday? Hey, well, no problem. I have to teach the captain's wife how to make quiche by ear before I leave.
But what's this clearance procedure stuff? You're leaving?
I'm going home, ma'am. I'm going home. I got a 2-week leave on account of my orders to ship out to Vietnam.
Vietnam?
Yeah, Vietnam. Listen, we're going to meet down at the club at 6 o'clock for a little bump in to celebrate the departure. Are you coming?
Yeah, Steele, yeah. Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah, I'll be there. But didn't we already celebrate that?
Smith survived another ferocious round of pumping to once again celebrate Conroy Raphael Steele's new assignment. Steele survived Vietnam, returned to the Virgin Islands, and opened a very popular and very good restaurant called Le Chateau Steele. He asks you to drop in and have a drop on the house. Radio Theater has been brought to you by Sears Roebuck and Company, where our policy is satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Sears, where America shops for value. A Weekend Pass was written by Odie Hawkins, produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your host was Andy Griffith. Our stars were Brock Peters and Robert Dokey. Featured in the cast were Robin Braxton, Jack Crucian, Nick Latour, Peggy Weber, Barney Phillips, Helen Martin, and Jim Knapp. The music for Sears Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. This is Art Gilmore speaking. The Elliott Lewis production of Sears Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI.
Music 103, 24 hours a day, KMOX FM, St. Louis. CBS News. President Carter is speaking at this hour at a town meeting in Shimoda, Japan. He plans to fly back to Tokyo in a few hours. This is John Bohannon reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Earlier today, the president ended his preliminary meetings with Japanese leaders. The Economic Summit Conference will officially open Thursday. Mr. Carter flew by helicopter to Shimoda, about 100 miles southwest of Tokyo, for a U.S.-style town meeting. One comment Mr. Carter made was about the lack of oil for industrialized nations.
Our planet is not producing enough oil to meet all our demand. The industrialized nations, like the United States and Japan, must face this challenge together. Rather than competing with one another for every available barrel of oil, regardless of price.
Mr. Carter says the U.S., Japan, and the five other nations involved in the summit conference must reduce imports and cut waste and find alternative energy supplies. Back in Washington, the House was talking about other forms of fuel. We'll have that story and other CBS News in a moment. The House tonight approved legislation to provide $3 billion in price subsidies for production of synthetic fuels. More from Mariah McLaughlin.
The measure was a clear winner from the beginning, a bill to promote synthetic fuels as an alternative to imported oil. And when Majority Leader Jim Wright wanted to expand the package of federal subsidies to help start a synthetic fuel industry, that was approved without a roll call vote. The legislation will give a guaranteed federal price for fuels derived from coal, shale, and other materials. It calls for a target of 2 million barrels of synthetic fuels daily by 1990, 500,000 barrels a day by 1984. The legislation is politically very popular and a great plus for members of Congress as they head for home in the 4th of July recess, where they will be questioned closely by their constituents about what they've done about the energy crisis. Mariah McLaughlin, CBS News, Washington.
In Geneva, officials of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries have postponed until tomorrow a decision on new prices for crude oil. Sources say OPEC appears ready to return to a unified pricing system somewhere near $20 a barrel. President Carter reportedly is ready to make a decision on allowing an increase in the number of Indochinese refugees into America, and he's asking other countries to increase their immigration quotas. The U.S. has resettled more than 200,000 Indochinese refugees since 1975.
The United States is again demanding the immediate resignation of President Somoza as the only way to end the civil war in Nicaragua. But government officials in Washington have not threatened a break in diplomatic relations. U.S. officials are also saying that Cuban involvement in Nicaragua is increasing. A federal judge in Florida has granted an indefinite stay of execution for convicted killer Charles Prophet at Rayford State Prison in Florida. He had been scheduled to die in the electric chair tomorrow morning. Another convicted murderer at Rayford, Robert Sullivan, was also scheduled to die in the prison's electric chair, but he has also been granted a stay. These days, in most metropolitan areas of the Northeast, it's no longer, hello, how are you, how's the family, it's did you find any gas, if so, where, and how long did you wait? There's another side, too, from the operators. Consider the attendant at a station in Hartsdale, New York. He says a woman waited in line for 45 minutes for gas. The pump stopped at 67 cents. Before the attendant could ask why she got into line with a full tank of gasoline, she demanded that the 67 cents be put on her credit card. John Bohannon, CBS News.